Hello there, and welcome to the Thinky Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb Keith, and I'm joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and we have a guest today, Dave Zoll. Dave is you're the executive director of Mockingbird Ministries. Is that your title there?
Still, yes.
Yep. Still, yes. Yep. You have been on the show, I think, four or five times. The last time you were on the show was about this time last year. You came and you were at the Here We Still Stand conference, and we talked about your book, Seculosity. Mm-hmm. If people haven't listened to that episode or seen, I'd be surprised if they haven't
or
seen at least a picture of the book on Instagram or something. They should check that episode out first and then probably go buy the book and read it.
Buy the book.
Yeah, I think the
dead authors don't need your money, but alive ones do.
That's a good one.
I won't disagree.
We're going to have, while we're here this weekend, we're going to have a lot of people who have books recently out, and I think we might just do like a sweep of book topics on here. And one of the things I would say to listeners is statistically, people are not reading that much. And people buy, it's like something like five times the amount of books they read a year. So we know that when we ask you to buy a book, we're sort of like betting for 50 to 100% of your reading attention for the year. but I would say this is one of those ones that you should definitely add to the list where it's worth that 50% of all the reading you're going to do this year.
Wow, thank you.
So
the 50% of all the reading. That's a great compliment, actually. He didn't say that about any of my books.
Well, I wasn't thinking about that kind of stuff. I'll say it when we do a Being Dad episode again. I'll be like, listen, this is worth 100% of your reading attention this year.
There you go.
The remaining 50% for sure. But yeah, so now we hate to, I know you've probably been talking about Seculosity endlessly over the past 12 months, maybe a little less now that you can't be in person everywhere. But I thought we'd do Seculosity of the Pandemic.
Sure.
We did pandemic episodes from multiple perspectives during the early stages of it. Then we felt like we were probably exhausting the listeners.
Well, we focused initially a lot on the reaction of churches during the pandemic.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't say what is the right thing to do, but kind of trying to cover the gambit of what churches were doing. You know, everything from total compliance and full shutdown to the one pastor we could find that said, "No, I'm going to stay open
the whole time." Yeah,
the whole time, and and sort of, you know, just acknowledging that how hard that must be for a pastor or an elder board or a church council to decide what the right thing to do is. And I don't think that that's distinct from the conversation of individual people trying to figure out what the right thing to do is, because there's so many Seculosity messages attached to this. There's so many virtue messages attached to this whole thing. On one side, it seems like you're only considered virtuous if you wear a mask. On the other side, it's like virtuous and manly and strong and proud to not wear a mask. And it's, you know, either way, it's some sort of signal to a segment of the population about who you are and what you believe in and all this stuff. And it's just interesting.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's been like a case study like none other. You never in my wildest dreams would ever want this, but you have seen the dynamics that I try to talk about in Seculosity, about how, you know, sort of idolatrous relationships that people have with work or with just productivity, or even, you know, things like technology. You just have watched that blossom and be expressed in ways that are, you know, really painful to people personally. I think that it's not an academic question anymore. So I'm not sick of talking about it. It is funny when someone, before I wrote the books, an editor said, "I just want to let you know, are you interested in this enough for it to be the only thing you talk about for the next 3 years?"
Yeah,
and I said, sure. Because it's interesting to me, because the book's really about justification. And I think that that's really at the core of not only the biblical witness, but also our own lives. So,
yeah.
I was speaking at a church last month, so we finally got like some of the churches in California were able to open, and they have had my dad a bunch of times. And
And I offered to go this time, but they chose him.
They chose me.
It's either great or insulting. So I'm still working that one out.
So the opening.
But your dad feels that way sometimes.
You know, what's the goal of the son is to unseat the father.
Well, right? And he didn't know right away. I got this email that they chose me, and I went over to his house, and I was like, "You heard about that gig in Huntington Beach, right?" He's like, "Uh huh." I was like, "Guess what?" I was like, "You can stick it," But going there, you know, one of my jokes was, is like, no wonder you guys, like, good thing you didn't ask him back, because all he can do is Bean Dad, Melanchthon, and the Augsburg Confession. Like, you guys heard all three.
You have all my shticks.
Yeah, you've heard all of it. You need Caleb for, I got two things.
I can do the Formula of Concord, too, but that just seems a little long for everybody.
Well, now. I got this one thing now. I got this thing.
That's great.
I made up a word, so I get to sort of have the market cornered on it.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. It's a good thing, and people have you back 3-4 times to do the same one. There's never enough.
It's amazing.
You heard it here first.
So you're talking about sort of like the technological stress that, and like even moving work to the home. And there's a lot of effect to this, right? So outside of just the virtue signaling aspect of it, which is, I think, pretty apparent to everybody. You know, one of the things, this is one of our first in-person abilities to record with somebody in a long time. You know, we switched.
Well, we recorded in person with the one pastor who said, "I'm going to stay open."
You know, he's recording with everyone in person. Yeah.
Like everybody on the planet, you know, our workflow switched to Zoom. And
it was bizarre for us, too, because we live in a fairly rural area. So it meant that we'd stopped our excursions back to civilization for a while.
Yeah, like 5 months.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Like originally, too, when I'd say the reports about the mortality rate were, you know, really high, and that if you'd ever had any respiratory issues or something, that I had pneumonia like 3 years, like a bad pneumonia like 3 years ago. So originally he's like, "You're not going anywhere." And so I was at the house for months, and it was just totally different.
Oh, goodness.
You know, and then we finally come down the hill and make our way into an actual city, and it's like,
everything changed.
Everything. It's like
Rip Van Winkle over here. Yeah.
What's going on in the world?
Yeah. No, yeah. You know, we've been in this pandemic long enough, and I don't know when this will air, but that there's been several different phases now.
Yeah.
It's partly to the seculosity of it, too.
Yeah. Right.
Because if you remember at the beginning, although there was a mass panic, there was also a mass sigh of relief.
Yeah.
Right.
Of like, you know, I can cancel all this stuff I didn't really want
to
do.
I was like super happy not to get on planes.
That was me, because I had had 3 years of a just ridiculously busy speaking schedule. Mm-hmm. And even my board of directors at 1517, it's at the closing meeting of last year, said,
"Do half as many of
you need to slow down. You need to go down to half of what you're doing." And
they got what they asked for.
And I wasn't able to do it. And then all of a sudden it was just like,
zero.
This event's canceled. That event's canceled. This gig's canceled. That gig's canceled. Yeah. And I was actually relieved.
So there's that sigh of relief, and I certainly felt that big time, having been on like a, you know, a book cycle.
Yeah.
But then that's followed by a secondary anxiety after like 4 or 5 weeks. Yeah. It's like, well, now I can't get any work done.
Yeah.
Right. Or who am I if I'm not speaking? Right. Who? What's my identity if I'm not?
House remodeler. That's what I
mean. Exactly. Everyone became a house remodeler or a civil rights activist or a epidemiologist. You know, it's like all of a sudden, it turns out everyone was experts in completely different things. Yeah. But I feel like there was that part of it where the sort of workaholism was being pushed against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then it kind of morphed into this weariness. You know, throughout the summer, at least for people, I mean, I'm speaking as someone who's got small children at home.
Yeah.
That's very tough. And throughout, especially as the election got nearer, you have all of the signaling stuff happening. It just,
more and more.
Just kind of on steroids.
Yeah.
In a way that felt like, in some ways, it felt like the seculosity of politics has just been under assault because of the craziness, I guess you could say. Like, it's been hard to hoist your flag in any kind of way because people are just afraid of everything.
Yeah, afraid of afraid of having an opinion yet having very strong opinions about everything, in a sense.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Yeah.
And then
think of all the seculosities too. That it's like there's the political, there's the social justice, there's the stuff with the pandemic, there's the work stuff. I mean, it's just, wow.
It's really, yeah, it's acute, I guess you'd say. It's acute. And, you know, I didn't want to be I didn't want to be the book to be illustrated in quite this sort of violent of a fashion, but it's somewhat part of it's gratifying. I gotta say, and it, personally speaking, to figure out who am I if I can't be a preacher and a speaker, is my identity really in Christ? What is the what about my role as a husband, and I'm and a father, and I'm home in a way that I haven't been, and why does that feel less than to me if it's not, if it's actually the greatest gift of my life? These are real questions that I think a lot of men, a lot of women have had to deal with too. I talked to a lot of ladies who have to work and then are now really at home full time with the kids, and everyone's kind of wanting to really.
I just listened to an interview with Megyn Kelly, former Fox News, CBS, right? Did she go to CBS or NBC?
She was somewhere real short, like only 11 months.
But it was because she's starting a new podcast now, and it was really interesting. She was talking about how when she was at Fox, she never saw her kids, and it was horrible. And she'd cry every night as her husband would tell her what happened with the kids during the day. And then she went to the other place and didn't last very long, and then she's home. Mm-hmm. Right, and she's talking to the guy about starting this new podcast. She goes, because I like to work. It's like I was sad when I didn't see my kids, but there's too much of a good thing. And I was like, yeah, I bet a lot of people feel that way right now.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
So I feel like, and now then there's the seculosity of the pandemic, in that you have people. Remember, there's a time early on where immediately you had this sort of Oprahfication of the pandemic. It's like, this is an opportunity for personal growth. Mm-hmm. This is your, you can finally write the novel you've been working and thinking on. You can finally,
look at all the time I have.
All of your distractions are gone. You can lose that weight. You can optimize your...
I did that.
You did do that. Yeah. And then there was a pushback again. And, the classic line was always like, Shakespeare wrote King Lear during a pandemic. Mm.
During a plague, probably.
And everyone's like, wait, I got to write King Lear now? What? Yeah. and then there was this sort of like almost secular call for grace, saying it's okay if you're stressed out, if you're just
a normal person during this, it's all right.
If you're just a normal person.
Yeah.
And you sort of want to say like, well, I needed grace beforehand too.
Yeah.
And now we're getting to the stage, it feels like, where it's, well, what did you do with your pandemic? What did you do with your quarantine, Scott? Like, what, okay, you lost weight, but, how's the house looking? Or what's going on with, did 1517 spend the time, woodshedding all these new ideas? It's like, you know what I mean? Now it's prove yourself, justify
everything you did.
And if you're a pastor.
I hadn't even thought of that, because we went in hot and heavy with like new video content at the beginning
and
of this.
Audio, we were recording like crazy.
At the beginning of this thing, I was actually personally, because I was doing three new things with different people, busy. And then I think people just kind of realized, man cannot live on bread alone kind of stuff. Just like new audio and video content can't be all there is to life. And, it was an interesting sort of, but I hadn't considered that before.
Well, a lot of think about it for pastors who, at least with Mockingbird, with 1517, we were frankly in a position where we could do kind of more of what we were doing.
Yeah, we were poised to do.
We'd taken the online thing very seriously and thought we had the networks or whatever, the infrastructure. That's the word. But if you're a pastor and, you need to gather people for worship, and all of a sudden you can't do that, but then you become like a television producer.
Right.
And everyone's got like these Bin Laden type videos that they're doing in those first couple weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, you have these obnoxious folks who will say, like, well, pastor, you know, has it been a nice 6 months off, you know? And,
yeah. Oh, my gosh.
The pastor's, like, calling everyone in the congregation to check in. He's
working more in his office than he has in the last decade.
Working, probably. Yeah. And all of the, you know, the stuff about pastor burnout and suicidal ideation is, like, way up among the pastor because people have never had to work so hard.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I get worried about that. It's a, it's both an opportunity for the gospel, as is everything.
Well, you got to think that in every instance, people have probably never worked on their house so hard. People have probably never parented so hard. People have probably, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just a lot to consider about every aspect of it. It's just, what do you do when all of a sudden the perception is that all you have is time?
Yeah.
You know.
Most precious commodity.
Yeah.
It's, anyway, it can be a deeply oppressive. So I'm watching that now and kind of wondering where that'll lead us. And, you know, as you watch, as people sort of emerge in tentative ways, there's still so much fear and so much, aversion to risk. And, you know,
I got to say that out of the results of this, if I have, dancing on the edge of the political on this or societal, the thing that worries me the most about moving forward is how frightened people are.
Yeah.
And I just don't think.
Or that decisions about risk are exported sort of outside of you.
Well,
right?
Decisions about risk and the fear of death are the only deciding factor. It's not like, you know, let's even think in past generations with major historical events, you know, it's like there's a bunch of variables that you take into account as you make a decision. There's like, is there an evil that needs to be fought? Is there a greater good that I can be a part of? Is there a risk of death? Of course, that's in there, right? And there's all these variables, but it seems like to me, as we approach all these decisions now, there's one variable, and that's risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, the sort of, the risk assessment guy at the office has become the Pope, and it's
And they're never gonna the type of personality that's attracted to that kind of job is never gonna be the ones that's saying, "Yeah, go for it."
Yeah,
but as a Christian, I feel there's something about the life of faith which is bound up in risk.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, it's funny. I've always thought that when you're running an organization like this or Mockingbird, you by law, for the most part, you're required to have a board of directors, right, to incorporate as a nonprofit. It's always good to have a lawyer on your board because they will be the ones that when you try to do something that's sort of dancing outside the circle will say, well, I don't know if we do that, there's a good chance that we could get sued or da-da-da. It's good to have a lawyer on the board warning you about your liability.
Yeah.
But if you had a board full of lawyers, you know, you would actually never do anything that would in any way put you in danger of being sued or taking any risk. And that's why it's good to have, like, you know, an entrepreneur on there and, you know, just other
in
voices.
In the case of our ministry, as a pastor.
Yeah, other voices.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like the biggest thing that worries me right now is it's almost like one voice, and that's risk.
I know, and there was a, always am reading editorials, and someone finally said the other day, we should have some humanities people in the room, some literature folks, some philosophers in the room. I mean, maybe even a theologian, who knows, when some
crazy
of these decisions are made. And it is I think it's, the pandemic has been a great revealer of just how frightened people are of death. And just how possessed we are, in fact, by our fears. But then also it's been surprising in some positive ways because, you know, it's always like some of the people you thought would be rock solid and you know, just onward and upward and just full of creativity and verve during this time have collapsed, have fallen apart. And some of the people that you thought would have completely be a basket case have proven to be, you know, stalwart. And I think there's been some surprises in that regard, but for me as a Christian, I get worried about the fear of death when
as being the ultimate decider.
And of course, we're here preaching, you know, death has no sting, and and then we're here. I've just flown my first post-COVID flight across the country to San Diego, to be at the Here We Still Stand conference, which is is about freedom this year. And so it's like I had to open up my talk being like, well, we're talking about freedom in a time when people have never really felt less free.
Yeah.
Free to express themselves, free to travel, free to invest in the future.
Right.
And so do we really believe in what we're talking about, or is it just a academic exercise?
You could almost say that COVID, I mean, and secularity really gets down to this too, because as you explore religions, there's really two. There's Christianity, there's justification by grace through faith in Christ.
Alone.
Yeah. Or there's
everything else.
You know, justification by the law. And what this shows is, you know, COVID always accuses. Like there's no winning here. This is one of the most you know, like strict applications of the law. Equally on the entirety of society,
be it secular applications, you know, it's kind of like Dave Little L law in a lot of ways.
But
you're still being smothered by all these Little L laws,
and it is the law in sort of one of the truest senses, in that not only does it bring up all these accusations about, are you doing enough, did you make the right decisions, do you care about your neighbor enough, are you doing the right things there, do you care about your liberties enough, are you doing the right things there, at the end of the day too, it's the fear of death. That's what
the
law
brings,
right? It'll kill you. Yeah,
you know,
it's the whole package wrapped up in this, you know, dark blanket over us. And I mean, Christians are uniquely prepared to handle the situation of the law accusing, because they're some of the only people, or the only people who really say, yeah, that's what the law does. The law always accuses.
Yeah, this is you feel the way you should feel.
It's not for success. Yeah. It's not for salvation.
Yeah.
It was given a purpose, and that purpose is to kill.
Yeah. Gosh, absolutely. That's a really, I don't think I've heard it put quite that way, because it is. That's exactly what we're dealing with. And it's in the book, I try to define, secularity really is a euphemism for justification by works of the law, and all the ways in that is expressed. And so it was interesting, you know, in the early days of, I was working on a book proposal during this time. I was like, should I, and I asked an agent, I said, should I write about the pandemic? And he said, you know, the pandemic books have already been accepted and like been run with like 2 weeks into the pandemic. People had already pitched all those books. Like,
people can write manuscripts in a week.
I know. It's like, I guess that's past, because after the pandemic, are we going to want to read about it that much? I don't know. I think,
is there going to be an after the pandemic?
Is there going? Well, geez, I'm so glad
that was a bummer. Somebody
hung out with you guys today. Yeah,
would you like some bourbon? Actually,
yeah. Some things will probably change for the better. Will people start to? Will online church be something that people like really consider an actual substitute for the real thing? And I feel like every churchgoer I know has been like, well, it's better than nothing, and then slowly it's been like, it's just barely better than nothing.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I'm not sure it's better than nothing. Maybe the longer we do it, the less likely people are to ever come back.
It's one of those things too. I get a link to a Zoom service, you know, every Sunday, and everybody who's there's name pops up on the screen, right? Because your camera's off if you're one of the people just watching, at least in our case. But you see every name of an attendee right there, which also means you see every missing name from the list as well.
And as time's gone on, the lists have gotten smaller,
right?
Because people are zoomed out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I am.
I mean, I've noticed like a lot of the younger people just don't do it because they're having to do it for work all week. But
yeah,
well, I mean, the kids are doing it for school. People are doing it for work. They're doing it for entertainment. They're doing it for learning. It's just, I mean, to have gotten stock in that company in February would have probably been great. But other than that, I think everybody's burned out on it.
Essentially, yeah, because I've worked with students, you know, at the University of Virginia there, and they're all having to do these online learning. And they, to a person, I thought they'd hate it more than they do. They dislike not being able to be with their peers and getting policed all the time. But what some of them have said, it's kind of nice to be able to press pause and rewind and like hear the person again in that regard. And yet you miss the richness of actual, you know, what goes on in the academic setting. That's
conversations
not just
online on Zoom and things like that have to be really safe. Like, it's hard to like have the question that has risk on it during that, because it feels weird to respond. Maybe the whole thing, maybe it'll break up halfway through what you're talking about.
Maybe it's being taped. Yeah.
Maybe it's
being
recorded.
I was going to say, professors aren't going to say everything they'd say in a class if it's all being recorded.
Or potentially watched by an administrator or something like that. Yeah, you don't.
Yeah. Well, I think that you also have seen when pastors have always been, you know, the count has always been important, you know, the numbers, and even though we preach a message that really says it's okay,
the number's not the deal.
Yeah. Number's not the deal. But this is like, you know, Scott, you know, and I, we've basically been running websites as a central part of these ministries. And so I've been connected, tethered to the internet for 13 years now. Right. And I know how crushing those like traffic numbers can be.
Yeah.
Podcast numbers.
Well, you and
like
I know that, you know, March and April were horrific for podcasts.
Yeah. You'd think everyone was going to be listening to podcasts.
I sure did.
That was interesting news, I thought.
And all of a sudden, you know, I just go look at the network numbers in April, and I'm like,
shows what people do while they drive to work and while they're at work.
Yeah, this is bad news.
Guess Caleb, it's not just that people were listening to it while they were driving to work; it's that people were listening to it at work.
Yeah, this is like why Cyber Monday started, because you know, they tried, online retailers tried to get people to do Black Friday, but it didn't work, and then they didn't shop over the weekend. But when they got back to work and they had their high-speed internet connection, that's when they do their shopping.
Oh, my gosh.
Back before high-speed internet, and that's how Cyber Monday started, because that's what people do at work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard that more people are buying more books, actually, than they had before. I don't know if they're reading more books.
We'll have to see. Maybe it'll change this year. That'll be an interesting one. I could understand why, right? That's like, books are a break from staring at the screen. I mean, it's a lot different. I bought your brother's latest book, but I think you knew this.
I read
He was talking about it. They sold out so quickly, I had to get a Kindle version, and I read it, but it was killing me reading it on the Kindle instead. Yeah,
especially during this time. Yeah,
yeah, just having the paper, being able to set it down, pick it back up. When I log into my iPad to read a Kindle book, I see all these notifications.
Yeah,
you go check your email. You go look.
It's hard to read even if you're just a physical book. Even if your phone is within reach,
right?
It's just come across a word you want to look up, or a reference you don't remember, and it's so easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's so anyway. Seculosity has been off the charts during the pandemic, in a way that I would hope that people are, you know. We're just the same as we've ever been, and that we're, you know, crushed by the law and in need of some a word from outside ourselves. But I don't know if you were to ask me if I'm like super hopeful about it. I think anything's possible with God, but I do think that the cards, the momentum moving back in the direction of distraction, and new frontiers of seculosity opening up, has been disconcerting, to say the least. Someone sent me something yesterday where they were they had just bought a blender, and
it talks to the internet.
The blender had said, like, it says, "Welcome to the family."
Oh my god!
Like, welcome to our family, like of appliances or something like that. And like the guy who was he's like, "Are you?" He actually tagged Seculosity. He said, "You know, I just want a blender. I don't need to be inducted into a community of like shared affinities and like to feel like I'm, you know, I'm really
the
like
the blender ecosystem."
The blender ecosystem. He said, "What is going on?" But you watch that, and you've seen, especially as people have moved more online for their retail, you see all of these, what are they called, blands, you know, little Instagram ads are popping up for, you know, single product companies. And a lot of them are pitching. They've got the story. They've got like a story of like, once upon a time, three of us were talking about toothbrushes, you know.
Yeah.
But then it becomes this sort of it becomes an identity marker, and it becomes a whole narrative about disruption. So there's a purpose to it, even though all of these companies get bought out by conglomerates. But it becomes this whole seculosity thing. But these they're off the charts right now. Everywhere you go, you're being marketed to on sort of spiritual terms in a way that feels to me deeply cynical. And yet, I also I like the Dollar Shave Club, you know. They send me good razors. It's a good razor, cheaper, and it's cheap, you know, and they make me laugh, and they're appealing to the whole person. But it, taken as a cumulative whole, you're like, I guess people are really lonely, and we're looking to our brands to,
yeah,
to meet that need, that for community, for a fellowship, for
yeah,
identity. First, it's an absolute seculosity thing.
Have you watched the Netflix The Social Dilemma?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it told us anything we don't already know, but it certainly put it in more alarming terms.
Yeah. I mean, that's seculosity through and through, right? It's just that these companies have figured out a way to calculate your and aggregate your data to maximize your desire to be sort of the best presented. And then also they've capitalized on that to sell you brands and to get you brand addicted. And it's just, I think when you say, you know, people ask you, are you hopeful? And you kind of hedge your bets a little bit on that. I'm with you. I think that, you know, I'm a believer in there's nothing new under the sun, but there can be new stuff for us, right?
Yeah.
That is scary. And there's nothing new under the sun as far as like our sin goes, and as far as our low anthropology goes, and as far as even our desire to self-justify to the world or to God. But it does seem amped up.
Yeah.
You know, it does seem like there are faster conduits for us to express that, and
yeah, the technology seems to amplify or exacerbate certain universal tendencies. I think that, you know, if there is a source of hope outside of the second coming of Jesus Christ,
right?
It's that we didn't see the pandemic coming. I mean, no one saw that. I mean, some people, maybe like Bill Gates or whatever, but.
Does he say he saw it coming?
No. Apparently he did sort of predict something like this. But if you talked to us 2 years ago, it's like, tell me about the 2020 Here We Still Stand conference, because 2018's been great. And he was like, well, it'll be streamed and we'll all be wearing masks. And it's none of us. So basically the biggest things going on in our lives right now is something that no one saw coming. So there's nothing, it stands to reason that other kind of interruptions could happen. And that's actually true on everyone's life. You know, the biggest things in your life usually are not things you planned.
Yep, for sure.
No one plans to be converted. You know, no one plans to fall in love. And so maybe there's some hope there, because you know, I didn't see this coming. So what on earth is coming down next? And it is funny when you watch The Social Dilemma. One of the things I've been thinking about is this election years, and this is not a partisan thing. It's more like how come none of that is on the ballot? Like you watch that, you watch The Social Dilemma.
I totally agree with you.
And you want to say, like, people ask me, like, what are the three big issues for you? And you know, everyone like, has their own
privacy
issues.
Privacy rights.
One of me was like, well, you know, I sort of want Silicon Valley to be reined in.
I was just saying this last night. I was like, I can't believe that it's not a bipartisan issue in this country to protect individual privacy online. I'm like,
because the left would get on board from a public health perspective, and the right could get on board,
or even from individual perspectives of the left on like protecting your privacy in your bedroom and what, you know, all this type.
Yeah,
I would think that there's reasons for both sides to.
I have a feeling it will
to
be.
Get on board with this. It is in Europe.
There's a prop. I just voted on it in California. There's a prop for digital privacy rights up in California right now. I didn't read the whole bill, but.
Their whole business model would collapse. I mean, there's got to be lobbying organizations out the wazoo.
It's probably one, it was a proposition that didn't suggest spending $1 billion to, it'll probably lose. But
Well, you know, I think that like so much of our social pathology right now and our anxiety is linked to the way that technology has come to sort of rule our lives, or social media, which as we all know, is really just here's who you should be and here's who you actually are, and it's leveraging those things and exploiting those things in a person, but it's also we were doing it beforehand. It's just again a nonstop thing. I think as the public health fallout or the mental health fallout comes clearer and the rights aspect. Anyway, I don't know how we even got on this subject, but I would just say that I'm surprised. I see that as fueling a lot of the other issues that are going on.
Yeah.
and divisions and divisiveness.
Well, it's illustrative of, you know, something that we've been willing in a lot of ways, just society. Again, this isn't a partisan thing. Society, we've been willing to let go of, you know, some of our privacy.
Yeah.
And some of the things that in the past we may have protected from other people knowing for the sake of expanded popularity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or convenience, or there's lots
convenience
of things, right?
Or
like, think about like the information, you know, that Amazon and Google keep on you for the sake of,
or Grubhub, or you know, whatever the,
you don't want to enter everything every time.
Right.
You
yeah. Know. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
when
it comes to the social dilemma, you watch that and you realize one of the things that all the people that were in the room, a lot of them thought they were doing something good.
Yeah, especially the like button guy said that.
They really thought they were doing something good, and it's because they had their anthropology was really high.
Really high.
There you go. Yeah.
And they had no sense of the fact that there is going to be a flip side, an underbelly. That human beings are also.
That's a whole other podcast, but I think that's one of the big issues going on here, is that people are shocked when something they intended for good is used for evil, or when somebody they thought was good does something evil. Mm-hmm. They're shocked by it, and they're, you know, it's shock value that a evangelical preacher would have an illicit affair. You know, okay.
I'm never really surprised when
it's shock value when a sports hero is arrested for drunk driving, or Lance Armstrong, right? When your cycling hero who denied doping all those years is actually found to be a doper. Mm-hmm. It's shocking to people. And I'm like, okay, it's not shocking.
But I get that it's shocking. Often.
Yeah.
And that sounds so morose to folks, but it's actually, I think, a driver of compassion and love. But that was, to my mind, the social dilemma didn't unmask some global conspiracy. It really just said that a lot of these young people who are so smart
were a little naive.
We're naive about human nature. And it has come to cost us, I guess. So, and that's a lot of that is fuels seculosity. Although a lot of the bottom line is driven by a sort of a sense that there's some psychological frailties that are being, again, exploited. But seculosity, because it's the justification by works of the law, by what you do, by how you parent, by how you date, by how you vote, it's premised on the fact that if you just know what you to do, you'll do it.
Right.
And as that's not really,
well, that's sort of the
biblical
enlightenment mentality, right? That if you can educate people out of everything,
out of sin,
is out of real? Sin,
and that is
out of bad health, out of, you know, this, that, and the other.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, well, we should have learned it, but
no, you certainly can't. There's snacks downstairs, and I haven't had like soda in like months.
Caleb's like, "Who ordered all the healthy food?"
And I was like, Sierra Mist, ginger ale. I'm like, "What am I doing?"
Snickers.
He walks up to his afternoon snack, and it's a rice cake and some peanut butter. He's like, "What the heck?"
Quinoa salad for lunch. Where's my canes? I think one of the things to maybe end on, just to switch over to the maybe the brighter side that we can offer people, right? So we don't end on the accusation.
Sure.
Is to say here, you know, there are two words to be spoken, law and gospel in this situation. And the law is speaking fervently in people's lives. Like we see, and it's reaping lots of fruit. It's doing its job well. And so, you know, what does the Christian have left to do here? What does the Christian have to offer besides one more thing to do, one more Zoom service to show up to, or even what can you offer inside that Zoom service when people show up? And that's a proclamation of Christ crucified here, right?
Absolutely.
We're not saying it's hearing that's going to be a silver bullet so that you're not worried about the tangible, these other things in your life, like going to work the next day, what's going on with your kids at school, your own health. This is the answer we have towards the, is it going to be okay?
Yes. Yes. And you can say, on account of Christ, yes. Yes, right. It will be okay. I think that we can rest as preachers, as Christians, as just, you know, the communion of saints. The law has always been the air people breathe. And it's never been more true that you can, when someone walks into your church, when they are able to walk into the church, more than ever, you can rest assured that they have been convicted and condemned by the law all week. That's the only voice that they've really heard. And that doesn't mean it may be the arbitrary cruel law of the world, you know, right. Little L law, but
not pointed in the same way.
I sort of feel like we've got one bullet in the holster, you know, and it's the imputed righteousness, and it, you know, the resurrection of the dead,
right?
To people who are dead, extremely afraid of dying and full of despair about their own ability to measure up in any significant way, or to have gotten COVID right.
Yeah.
So I think that the shed blood of Christ has never been a more, it's always been urgent, but it feels like an easier urgency, I guess I would say.
For us, it's maybe never been more urgent. For us, like as a young society, it's never been more urgent.
Yeah, and you watch forms of Christianity that, you know, have really, I don't know, have stressed other things, shall we say, or more kind of a action in whether that be personal piety, whether that be social justice, and you know, you want to say like, well, people are going to be coming back to church after months of feeling afraid and exhausted and in dire need of and lonely, and are you really going to tell them about things they need to do, or are you going to tell them about what Christ has done and what Christ is doing, right. and the kingdom come, you know? I hope that, you know, and my prayer is that you'd see more of that, and maybe so. So
yeah, I hope that's true. I hope that I would encourage people to sort of be, you know, when we've had Jim on during Here We Still Stands, we've had episodes where he and Steve Paulson have come and told stories about hearing people's confessions, and we did an episode Confession and Absolution, and the thing I think tries to ring through my ears all the time is he said you have to have ears to hear people's confession. They're confessing all the time.
Ears tuned to hear confession.
Yeah, and too. You're probably not hearing it as often as you see it. And this is one of those opportunities where somebody may be confessing to you in the realm of asking for advice or whatever it is, and they may need an absolution way more than they need an absolution more than they need that advice. And the other thing I hope is, you know, with the amount of pastors who have had to make really hard decisions, and often pastors without a pastor, right, mm-hmm. is that there is somebody in your world, if you are a preacher and you've had to make these difficult decisions during this time, where you can go and receive the absolution, because chances are you got something wrong along the way this time, this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, chances are.
Yeah.
No, the pastors out there are out on a limb, and we need to be praying, but also, as you say, pastoring the pastors and preaching the gospel to one another.
Amen.
Well, hey, Dave, thank you for coming on this episode. I had fun. This was a good one, actually.
That's awesome.
Actually.
Yeah.
There's that word of law.
You got to keep the expectations low and then go out.
So when you come on next time,
yeah,
we have high expectations.
Again, go look at Seculosity. I'll put the link in the show notes. And
there's a paperback edition that came out last month that has an extra chapter and a lot longer. It's updated. So
great.
People have the old copy. Here's a chance to buy it again.
Oh, there no, you got to buy another one. I did that with Being Dead.
And Christmas is not close, but it's not far either.
That's
so
right.
This is maybe an opportunity to start that shopping early. I do want to note, Here We Still Stand is...
You can give my pitch like I give in a speaking event.
Right.
Like if you don't buy this book, you may not be a Christian.
Here We Still Stand was live streamed about two weeks ago from this episode coming out. If you didn't watch it live, those videos should be available online. I'll put a link in here as well. And registrations for Here We Still Stand 2021, which we're planning on hopefully doing normally, as long as things, you know, we have a whole calendar year from now for things to settle out a little bit. You can register now. Again, link in the show notes for that. When you sign up, this is a little self-promotion here. When you sign up, there are breakouts, and you can sign up for breakout talks. And
are you giving a breakout?
I have a breakout.
Oh, the sense there's something coming. Yeah,
I have a breakout next year. My first Here We Still Stand breakout. If you register, sign up for my breakout.
I'm making the big time.
There's a little bit of a competition about who will fill out the most breakouts. I'm counting.
Is Donovan Riley doing one?
Yeah, but I'm not versus him. It's against Loso. Oh. Okay, I get it. You want to hear Loso? He's way cooler than me. Like. But
you know more about Melanchthon.
Thinking Fellows listeners,
you want to sign up for my breakout because I'm so far the only person with a Melanchthon-themed talk for celebrating 1521.
And you studied with Dave Zoll's brother for a while.
I did.
I mean, there you come go. Come on.
Come on.
Wow.
So my breakout, when you sign up, Caleb Keith, you know what to do. So hey, sure. Thank you for listening to this episode. We'll catch you next time.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Oh, it was great, bye-bye. Dave. Bye.